Empty Set Entertainment presents Slay, created by Scott Sigler. This story is intended for mature audiences only. Listener discretion is advised.
Hello and welcome to a Slay Q&A. This, of course, the story is over. We are putting this up so that you guys can watch it and enjoy it. This is the book right here that will be out February 14th, 2024 on Valentine's Day. Scott Sigler, Rob Otto, we're putting it out, and we have none other than Rob Otto in the house with us via Zoom to answer questions. And we're going to put this in the feed, too, because what a fun day this is going to be. All right. A Sigler, please get us out the first question. Yes, Tracy, I'm recording. Hit us, A.
All righty. So the first question, we had a couple of questions right off the bat that have to do with co-writing. So the first one from Craig Leiden is, why did you decide to co-write with Rob? How did you decide to co-write with Rob? And Rob, why did you want to do this with Scott?
What an excellent question.
Let's start out. I'll start out. The reason we decided to co-write is because this was supposed to be an organic story. I kind of figured it out as I went along, which is something I've never been good at and frankly I've never done before. But we needed to keep content in the feed. So this started out as a very simple, innocent way to keep stuff coming in the podcast feed, which is important for our business, keep things going there. And I made it through maybe 9, 10, 11 episodes, and already the story had gone off in 27 different directions. And I knew there was like, I can't keep track of it. I don't know where this is going. I sort of know how I want it to end, but I was out of control. And I almost lost it all. So I called the guy I know who knows story better than almost anyone else. I called my buddy Rob Otto and I said, Rob, can you help me out? I'm up against it. I'm all pinched up. Can you help me out? And Rob, why don't you just tell him why you decided to write along with me?
So it's really interesting. So 3 years ago, Scott, honestly, for years, Scott has said, Rob, I want to get together. You know, when you and I are together, and really you and I and the whole gang of buds that we grew up in high school, the one-liners are flowing and we all laugh so hard. He's like, I want to figure out how to capture that on paper in one of my projects. And for years, we talked about that. And so he and I started collaborating on what became our first movie script years ago. Yep. It wasn't organic and it didn't feel right until we got together and did our first 1 week writing, you know, escape. I went out to San Diego with A and Scott and we essentially wrote the entire movie script. And working together, there's a couple of things that we discovered. One, we bounce ideas off each other very well. Personal feelings don't get involved. When something is a shit idea, we tell the other one that is a shit idea. But we'll still talk it out and we'll see if it works. But then the other one's always proven right that it was indeed a shit idea. And what we also found out was that, I mean, you guys have read Scott's stuff. You've listened to it. You've seen it. He can get girthy. And I'm not just talking about the waist down. So he also needed somebody that could kind of rein him in and focus and not let him go off in 27 directions. That's exactly what happened. We knew we wanted our movie script to be a maximum of 90 pages. And we got pretty close to that.
Yeah.
So when he started feeling this one going off the rails, he needed somebody to focus it in. And that's when he asked me. And that was just an opportunity. It literally started out. It was about the 17th, so you were like 17 weeks in, Scott, by the time you sent me the script to date and just like, what do we need to recall? What makes sense? What doesn't? And how do we get, this is kind of the ending you were thinking of. How do we get everything there? And it started out with me just tossing some ideas around. And then this turned into our third writer's retreat that we just did, you know, this summer up in Sheboygan, Michigan. And that's when everything came together and, yeah, as to why I would do it, one, I'm a glutton for punishment. No, just playing. I got to tell you, to see that book cover with both of our names on it is, it makes me proud. It's really cool that we were able to collaborate on something. So that's why. That's why I did it, because we've collaborated on stuff inside our heads for 40 years now.
Yes.
This is something that is finally outside of our heads.
It is, just to see something. I'm still tweaking the camera as we go here. Just to see something that Rob and I did together. We have been through role-playing and just hanging out as friends. We have literally been telling stories together for 35 years, somewhere in that ballpark. And this one is absolutely special. Every time I see this cover and our names are on it together, I am borderline verklempt, but I don't get verklempt because I'm made of iron. That's my niece.
He doesn't get verklempt. He makes other people verklempt.
Yes, I do. Yes, I make other people verklempt. All right. So that is the answer to that question. Let's move on to the next question, please.
Okie doke. So the next question comes actually just in this chat. Paul Inman added a couple. The first one is, was there an Alive reference in Slay?
We're getting a little bit of echo on Rob's audio, and that might be coming from your side. So mute your mic. Did you mute your mic through that last question?
I did mute my mic, but I can't. I also am listening to the story because I can't.
Oh, let's take a look over here. Hold on. I can mute you. Yeah, I'll just mute you at this point. All right. No offense, wife of mine, but I am muting you. Here we go. Boom.
Oh, my.
Wait.
That question was there an Alive reference in Slay?
Maybe. I was writing most of this. I wrote just flying by the seat of my pants. Absolutely. And Rob, talk a little. The only way the video goes is to get.
All right.
There we go. Yeah, gotcha. Yeah. So there may have been a Live reference. I don't remember. Rob, do you remember any Alive references in the book?
I certainly don't remember us ever having a conversation about making a reference. So if there was an Alive reference in there, it was just a happy accident.
Okay.
It doesn't mean that we won't go back and find it, Paul, and then make it a huge reference for the next 4 Slay books.
That's a fact. Sometimes these happy accidents, we go back. I've told you guys this a million times. You're like, hey, is this going to happen in the story? I'm like, as a matter of fact, it is going to happen in the story. I'm glad I thought of it, and you appreciate my genius.
Scott, does that not go back to, like, our game mastering days?
Oh, 100%.
Like, when we used to role play, you know, Dungeons & Dragons and doing superheroes and champions and stuff? Mm-hmm. I know myself. Scott and I ran 2 concurrent campaigns at the same time that would sometimes cross over. Some of the best things we ever did went absolutely not according to plan. I could lead all of you player characters down a primrose path of exactly where I wanted you to go. And God damn it, none of you would do it. And you'd go talk to the guy in the corner instead, and it would go off in a direction where I just made it up pulling crap out of my ass. And we look back and the best would be like, wow, Rob, that was really good. I'm like, yeah, that's exactly how I planned it to go. Exactly right. So, but I think your writing comes from that same idea of letting the characters lead you where they want to go.
It's not
control them.
It's very similar. I've talked, for those of you who've been reading my stuff for a long time and watching the various, Sigrun Place and all this stuff and all the interviews, I have to talk about how I create these incredibly detailed outlines, sometimes 70 pages worth of single spaced outline. And then 10 pages into the actual book, one of the characters is like, nah, I'm not going in the haunted house. That's the example I use all the time. And as soon as that happens, that's when I have to go back and reinvent everything. All right. Take one moment here, everybody. We are getting echo from Rob and echo from A, small echo. I can't hear it on my end, so there's something else going on. So Rob and A, just try and talk a little bit slower so everybody can hear what you say. Apparently it's a minor echo. We'll do the best that we can with it. It might be something with Zoom. That's a fact. So this echo will not be here on the replay, though, because what I'm hearing is what goes to tape. So we'll get that figured out. And I'll see if I can tweak it, Scott, on Zoom.
I'm not hearing any echo on my end either.
Okay.
I did just turn my headphones down, maybe. My microphone was picking up my headphones
I think it's a restream Zoom thing because I'm hearing an echo from you. All right. So let me get A unmuted here and she unmuted herself. Oh my God. She can just unmute herself. What kind of world are we living in?
Whoa.
Go ahead, A.
So there's a second question from Paul, which is what, one more time, spoilers, everybody. What would have happened if Dragon went back to dog form when captured or while captured?
Well, okay. So what would have happened if Dragon had gone back to dog form while captured? You know what? Go fuck yourself, because she would have been able to get out of the net probably pretty easy. So, can you tell Paul to go fuck himself at all?
It's a magic thread net. It, obviously, the net would have shrunk with whatever it was keeping captive.
Yeah.
So, nice try,
4X, got
Paul.
It. If that's your real name, Paul.
In the climate-ravaged world of 2072, the city of Pura stands as a miraculous green haven. Pura is a geoengineered paradise that protects its fortunate residents from the global catastrophes of heat domes, fires, floods, and droughts. In a time when the world outside is unsafe, it's vital for Pura's existence that people rally behind the purpose of the city, and Demetria Lopez, head of the city's public relations, tirelessly promotes its idyllic image. But when she stumbles on a dark secret that, if exposed, would be the downfall of Pura's existence, she must decide who and what she's willing to protect. From Wondery, the makers of Academy and Dr. Death, The Last City stars actors Ray Seahorn, Jeannie Tirado, and Maury Sterling. Follow The Last City on the Wondery app or wherever you get your podcasts. You can binge all episodes of The Last City early and ad-free right now by joining Wondery Plus.
Okay, next question.
Okay, so I'll unmute myself or you'll unmute me?
You are doing a great job at unmuting yourself, so let's just keep doing that, because I'll forget.
All right. So Dot Silver asked, how exactly does one write a book with a writing partner? Do you each write a specific character? Do you swap out each chapter? Or do you write the whole thing together or something else?
Well, let's see. Let's go back to me, my main here. And then as soon as Rob talks, he'll pop back on the screen. The way this book works is Rob and I come up with the whole plot and the structure and hammer out all of the plot beats and do all of that work. And then once we have that, I go through and I write the actual chapters. And then Rob reviews the chapters and makes editorial notes or finds any continuity errors, continuity breaks. And also the other thing Rob does that's really important is Rob knows the story all the way through book five. We already have book five's end planned out, and you guys are going to get tired of hearing me say how fucking baller five is going to be. The end of five is just crazy. So that is the other part. Now I can keep a lot of stuff in my head, but not everything in my head. And Rob has a much better memory than I do for kind of seeing the big picture of everything. What, is that about right, Rob?
Yeah, and honestly, Dot, it has changed on the different projects that we have done. Mm-hmm. The screenplay we did and the, I guess it was the second screenplay that is becoming a novel. I would go ahead and write some sections and see where they would fit in with what Scott was writing. Sometimes he would do the first pass, I would come in and do a pass, and it would go back and forth, thus changing. This one was primarily Scott writing after we put the structure together, and then me going through and making sure that everything is clicking and it's telling the tale and setting up some things that we want set up, without screwing up any of the details going on. So honestly, each project has been a little bit different the way we've done it, with Slay being primarily Scott writing and then me coming in and not really doing a second pass as much, doing kind of a continuity overview to make sure it's still moving in the right direction.
A great question just came in from the chat room. Tracy Schenk asks, how am I going to get Rob's autograph on the book if he lives up north? So this is the first time I've thought about what we will do is probably do some kind of pre-order, no numbers, no, nothing fancy. Maybe we'll see if we can figure that out. We'll probably try and work with Mysterious Galaxy in San Diego. So we'll just ship Rob a fuck ton of books, or probably do what A is talking. We'll have A answer this in a second. One of the things we're working on is these, they're called tip-in pages. So it's just, it's a piece of paper with sticky on the back. Rob signs those, sends those to me. I sign them. They actually go in the books, and then they will ship out from either Mysterious Galaxy or from here. Hey, does that sound about right?
Yeah, so far we've discussed three options. One is somehow transfer, like getting books back and forth. Another one is the tip-in page that Scott mentioned. A third one, oh, there's four. A third one would just be book plates, that they both sign book plates, which is similar to a tip-in, but you just order the book plate and in it, so that we have your address and it's less expensive. And the fourth, and my favorite option, is fly Rob out to San Diego for the signing.
Oh, that's way better.
That's my book.
Much better idea. Much better idea.
The fifth option, and probably cheaper, shipping Rob via UPS to San Diego. just ask him to poke a couple holes in the box. We'll be good.
You know what? And 4X in the chat room has a great idea. If we're still doing this, like Rob and Scott go on tour together, that would be a home run. If we can line up a few cities where we can go do tour stops together, which we did on the rookie tour, but this will be even better.
Yeah. I got to tell you, the path of destruction that would be left behind us would be kind of biblical, and people would blame it all on global warming. It just would not. I don't know. We'll have to discuss that one, Scotty.
Yeah. I'm going to answer a real quick question. We'll go back to A. Timothy Clark in the chat room asks, is the sex gnome not so tiny Tim based on all those 8x10 color glossy photos a certain person sent you? Tim, no comment. You know what? Clearly you are blessed. That's all I'm going to say. You are blessed. All right. A, take it away.
All right. Next question comes from Adelu Adebayo. And I'm just going to read this whole thing because it's lovely. He says, all right, so this whole fantasy layer you've added on top or maybe under the Siglerverse feels like a few things are connected now that weren't before. I've got two questions that have been itching in my brain. One, okay, so filaments. These are harvested from emotions, right? Mm-hmm. To me, that sounds a whole lot like the energy coming up and out of prayers in Sacred Cow. For any of you who don't know, Sacred Cow is a short story of Scott's. So are the prayers that get focused up on top of the steeples in Sacred Cow filaments? And are those creatures up in the sky eating threadwork? Or maybe even harvesting threadwork? I mean, I really, really hope so, because that's just plain cool.
I will have to say, boy, am I glad I had that idea, because that's one of the best ideas I've ever had. So I appreciate that you noticed that idea. So there you go. This is how the sausage gets made, you guys.
I remember all those conversations we had about the Sacred Cow and the creatures and the brain itch, which honestly you should probably see a doctor for that. Obviously good catch.
We got a right winger throwing shit around, a block user on Facebook. Good day. Gabarox Vletermix. VLETRMX. I mean, they don't even try anymore to fucking come up with. They block using Facebook?
He probably got drawn in here because I said something about climate change.
Just jumping on live streams, talking about stuff. Crazy thing happened today. I talked about my ADHD yesterday. The fact that I took 98 minutes exactly. I went back and figured it out to come up with the three colors for the Lumencia Leopards football team in Slay. So it's actually germane to the conversation. And that should have taken 15 minutes. What are the colors of the Lumencia Leopards? Which didn't matter because the fucking colors aren't mentioned in book one at all. I could have made a note, pushed that off, but over an hour and a half to figure out what the three colors for the leopards are. I have the Pantone codes for all three colors, and I've added those Pantone codes to Siglerpedia, so you guys will be able to eventually see what the Lumencia Leopards uniforms are. But Rob will appreciate this. It couldn't just be any colors. It can't be red, because there's a bunch of teams who are red. So the colors are jet gray, ash gray, and emerald. Rob, I figured you would appreciate being able to have a NFL uniform color set that is not common. It doesn't look like the Panthers or the Jaguars. That's all I'm saying.
I think it sounds lovely. And now if you could take the next 98 minutes to figure out what their alternate jersey colors are, that would be great. A's just shaking her head.
Oh, dude, I was fucking in corn silk, and there was some yellow color. Fucking, like, it just went. And also, I posted this on the thing, too. I had, I think it was 43 tabs open when I started closing the tabs. I had 43 tabs open so that I could figure out what the fucking three colors were for the Lumensi Leopards that didn't conflict or copy an NFL team.
And so, it didn't have anything to do with what it was you were working on immediately that needed to be done, correct?
Nope. It was in the middle of finishing up notes for the final draft to send off to Big John Vizcar and Rob. And there you go. Paul Inman. Paul, I'm sorry. Paul Inman's a purist. Paul Inman says, that's one color too many. He's a two color guy.
Hey, Scott.
Yes, ma'am.
Look at the camera. You're looking at the production Mac, but that's not where your camera's pointed. Maybe you have to switch it on OBS.
All right. Okay, hold on. Let's go back to
Hey, am main. I looking at my camera properly? Am I now looking at it?
Yeah, you just did for a second. I think it's on my monitor. You have to switch to your camera, the main one.
Yes, hold on. I am literally on. I'm looking right at the main monitor. And then if I turn on A-Cam, what is this? Am I looking at it now?
Nope, A-Cam was looking. I think this is A-Cam.
Are you watching Zoom or the stream?
Oh, I'm watching Zoom. Sorry.
That's okay. Gotcha, babe. Thanks for jumping in there. That was very helpful.
Thanks, guys.
Can I ask a second question?
Yes, hit it.
All right. The second question from Adelu Adebayu is, during the chase when Billy and Lincoln were escaping the bounty hunters, the transits they used to teleport to and from the patchwork had a real, quote, sufficiently advanced technology indistinguishable from magic, end quote, feel to it. The wave of sickness Billy felt going into and out of the transit totems sounded a whole lot like the shimmer when ships punch in and out. Are transits just magical punch points? Is that blank bright/dark mix between locations punch space?
Maybe.
I don't remember anyone handing him a golden trash can to puke into. So
yeah, good point. Also, I'm just going to say this. I don't want to give any spoilers at this point. That's all I'm going to say. I have learned as my career has progressed, two very important points. Number one is the more amorphous and mysterious you make something and don't define it, the more enjoyable that is by everybody, because they think they've kind of figured things out and they get to enjoy their own little version of story, and it makes people happy. The other thing I figured out is when someone asks you if you are a god, you say yes. So that's that's where we go.
Oh, can we take a minute to just applaud Adebayo for the detail of how they are reading your work, Scott, and digging in very deeply? I am impressed. Well done. Well done.
Yeah, that's a top tier question.
I love it.
All right, A, hit me.
So, John Vizcarra just has the one question, which is there any overlap between the Hunter Hunterson world and the Lincoln Franks world?
I will say, to answer that question, I will say A has had to listen to me complain about this, because we came up with about 20 ideas for what we could do that I could write just on Friday, live stream it on Wednesday, and take that audio podcast on Sunday. And there were two particular properties that A, frankly, just said, just put her foot down. So we're not doing those two, because I think those two are going to be very big, very big hits, and you want to do those two correctly. We're not going to talk about what those are. So she sort of blacklisted those. We went through a bunch of other ideas and wound up with Slay, which is something I've been pitching as a TV series in Hollywood for probably 10 to 15 years. I got a whole series Bible. Rob had to read the whole series Bible to get in on this, you know, to understand what my vision was, where to go with it. A lot of which now is no longer applicable, because what Rob and I came up with is just flat out better. But once I was about five episodes in and things were rolling, I was like, are you fucking kidding me? This is very similar vibe to Hunter Hunterson & Sons. Why didn't I just continue with Hunter Hunterson & Sons? And frankly, I don't have an answer. I think A and I just missed that. Very happy with how Slay turned out. I'm super thrilled I got to write this with Rob. And I think it's a It's really good. Is it better than Hunter Henderson's Sons? If Rob and I had done the same thing, probably they're probably about equal. I say they're probably about equal. So that's really the answer. Hunter Henderson's Sons is lighthearted, supernatural, but it's more like that is more of a family show. What is the TV show with the guy from Married with Children with Sofia Vergara?
Modern Family.
Modern Family. Yeah. Hunter Henderson is Ghostbusters meets Modern Family. And Slay is vastly different. You know, it's like To Live and Die in L.A. meets Letterkenny meets The Mandalorian. So it's just much more graphic and much, there's a lot more dirty humor, poo and pee humor, and all kinds of just crazy pop culture references. So I don't have an answer to that question. I think we whiffed and wound up with two things that were close to each other, but I'm super happy with the way Slay turned out.
But when Lincoln Franks crosses over and meets Hunter Henderson and Sons, well, you can say that you knew it was going to happen first. Congratulations.
Well, now that with Shakedown coming out and we're getting into alternate planes of reality, all things are possible, man. All things are possible.
That's right. All things are possible.
Weird says, for what it's worth, I found it easier to identify with the Slay main characters than Hunter Henderson and Sons characters, which I get. I mean, you know, the family content and writing the nuclear family or something akin to that, it appeals to a certain demographic. But something like Slay, which is much more lone wolf with their friends and trying to find your own family, it definitely has a different feel. And so many of the people watching right now, the people in the chat room, the people reading my stuff, a huge amount of those people have found their own family. And it's not their birth family. They've found the people they love and care for and will do so all their life. So I think that's why Slay is going to resonate a little bit better. Hunter Henderson and Sons is a better pitch to a network by far. Slay is going to appeal to a lot more people. And that's not necessarily mean people from broken homes. It's like you, some of your family, if you have family, you don't really have that click. You have a deep connection, but you don't have that. You can't hang out in a room for 8 hours and laugh your ass off all the time. Whereas when it's a family that you found, those are people that identify with you a lot better. Rob, do you have any thoughts on that?
No, I like the way you put it. And basically hanging around for each other for 8 hours in a room laughing our asses off is exactly what every day on Writing Junket with Scott Sigler is like. So that was a real look inside of what our days turn into. Although 8 hours would be a short day for us, Scott. You find your tribe. You love your family, but you live for your tribe, and that's essentially what this has turned into. But even, you know, as we saw in Slay, even with all the problems that Link has with his brother and sister and father, when it came down to it, family was still there to back up family along with the tribe. So you really got to see both sides of that. Yeah, we don't get along, but nothing better come between us. You know, I can kick your ass and make fun of you, but somebody else better not try to do that because they're going to be in trouble.
100 experience points to Kyle Jacobson in the chat room, who said, feels like the professional movie, just me. No, Kyle, I will say the original concept of Slay was that I was going to have one scene from a famous action adventure movie and rewrite it so that basically Lincoln was doing that particular scene. Not as a ripoff thing, but as a way to pay homage to all these wonderful, wonderful movies that Rob and I grew up with. So that, you know, like the opening scene of The Professional was copped for the opening scene of Slay in my Hollywood pitch. And that was one of the angles. It's like, we're going to go back to like 40s noir. We're going to go all the way to 2010s and just grab different scenes and put Lincoln sort of in those with the different monsters and different ne'er-do-wells and make it a celebration of the kind of movies that influence Slay. That's why Magda's such a movie buff. That's why Billy's such a movie buff. That's why even Lincoln is dropping movie dialogue that I don't specify. This is a line from a movie that Rob and I love. So yeah, it's 100%. This whole show is a love letter to the action adventure movies of the 80s and 90s, just with a big supernatural skin put over the top of it.
And Scott, I didn't even notice this when Scott was putting together the mock-ups for the cover. Scott, you want to tell them the font that you used as part of the cover?
We were using the Lethal Weapon font for the cover. So the underline, so it's going to be Slay, and then book two will have like a big spray paint or blood splash two, which was very common, you know, in 80s, 90s movies. But the line underneath the headline, which you guys haven't seen yet, it's the Lethal Weapon font. So there you go.
And I didn't even catch that. Scott's like, did you see what font I used? And I was like, sans serif? I don't know what the hell you're talking about.
All right, hey, we'll get back to you one second. Just there's another question here. Preposterous Hippopotam says, also, I think Slay sounds more like a story you've written to amuse yourself and your friends rather than just a whole ass crafted story. Not disparaging either, just sort of a relaxed style of storytelling. And that is absolutely right. This is some of the most fun I've had writing a story for many, many years. I had a lot of fun writing Shakedown, but Shakedown's brutal. I actually did a trigger warning list. It's a page and a half for Shakedown. It's crazy how many potentially disturbing things are in that for various people who've had various things happen to them. There's none of that in Slay. If it's in there, it's vastly much more lighthearted, and it's just flat out. It's a fun thing to read. It's a fun thing to write. Bad things are still going to happen to good people, but it's super fun. Rob, do you think this is a fun story?
I think there's absolutely it is. And I think part of it is because the way that you wrote it, right? I mean, you only had a few hours over the course of a week to write each chapter. And so it had to come, you know, not from deep down in that dark FEO place that none of us ever want to visit, but it had to come more from the top of your head, which is mostly when us idiots get together and screw around with each other and do a lot of movie quotes. And that's kind of where this book seemed to come from, more off the surface, because you had that weekly deadline to get it ready to get out there in audio form. And I think that's very astute of Senor Hippopotamus.
When I had to get content out, I relied on the stuff that I know. And what I know is... Yep. Is 80s, 90s, noughts movies.
Poo-poo and pee-pee jokes.
I do know a lot about poo-poo and pee-pee jokes, very much. Also a lot about genitalia jokes, which we're not going to go into right now because sometimes my beloved spouse is like, could you just dial back the amount of genitalia jokes that are going into our live stream?
Yeah, Scott, if maybe you could just give like a little penis joke. That would be a good idea. Nope, A's okay. A needs to unmute and ask a question now, Scott.
Go for it.
While you and I are laughing like 12-year-olds.
Which is fine, except I have like 75 questions. And
stop asking the questions, Scott.
Lightning round.
Very quickly, Paul Inman asked a question in the Facebook chat room about how many words is this season coming in at, and the answer is about 100K.
109,918.
There you go. So going back to the questions, I have a question from Daryl Harris, who says, you have written a story from the point of view of the alien with phalanx. Have you considered writing a horror story from a dog's point of view? Perhaps dragon.
Hold on, I'm literally telling you guys what I'm typing Rob now. Rob, let's keep our answers short.
Okay.
No, I have not. And Dragon as a character, as she stands right now, is not going to, there's not enough there to support a full-length novel, possibly a fun short story. There's your answer. Go ahead, A.
Okie doke. You don't have to be that quiet. I'm just saying I have a bunch of questions left.
Okay.
From Ian Siegel, he says, for Slay, damn, what a fun ride this was. Was the magic/thread system all worked out before writing started, or did it evolve as the experiment unfolded? I'd probably know if I attended all the live reads, but it seems I'm always busy.
I'll take this one, Rob. There is a gentleman named Brandon Sanderson, who is a absolutely lovely human being and a monstrously successful, popular author who entertains millions and millions of people. And Brandon Sanderson is well known for his very meticulous magic systems. So he doesn't use physics or science, but when he gives you a magic system, all of the rules are clearly in place and he writes within those rules. And I forget the terminology for that. That is we'll call it for now, a well-defined magic system. And then there is a more loose magic system, which the vast majority of supernatural fiction uses sort of like, hey, you know what? there's magic. Don't worry about it too much. If you think about it too much, it'll ruin the story. So this is much more. I have the filaments system. Sometimes filaments are called threads, which then gets developed up the line into meshwork. So all of that stuff is there. There will be more explanation. There will be more rules applied down the line, but not a whole lot of rules, because one of Rob and I's big influences for this series is the MCU, the Marvel Universe. And those guys don't give two wet shits about consistency of powers. They change within a movie. They change movie to movie. It's all over the place. They never explain anything. And it's the most popular fiction in the world right now. So I think it's going to be okay. Rob, do you have a thought on that? Because Rob's a huge Marvel guy.
Yeah, I think what will happen, though, is as rules are presented as rules, we will not break those rules. But until a rule is written, we can say, well, we never said we couldn't do it this way. So now let's do it that way. And that's a new rule that will now be part of what we do. So but Scott came up with the whole threads and filaments, and I think it was absolute damn genius. Scott, it was
thank you.
It's such a good idea, and it works so well.
And we're going to roll into Akil's question here from the chat room. We're going to need a deep dive, a lore dump on the Bastion and the Bestiary at some point. Yeah, Rob and I already have that covered. You're going to get the whole background of the Bastion. You're going to find out all about how they came to be, why they're doing what they're doing now, where that is going, what it replaced, which is a huge part of the series. And that will establish a little bit more of the rules and a little bit more of the lore. But I'm not even saying this tongue in cheek. I'm glad we had that idea, because it's some sick ass shit. You guys are going to dig it.
Yeah, we got four books to fill, so trust me, there will be some backstory.
All right, AK, hit me.
So, Sean, I specifically would like to hear Rob's answer on this as well, because you got how the writing process happened. But the question that Sean Dyer asked, is the title for this story was established right at the outset. If you were to give it a new title at the end, would you stick with Slay or pick something else? Rob, you go first.
Yeah, thanks, A. I mean, I got to tell you, I do like the simplicity, and then each chapter will have a subtitle. Right. And so, you know, this is becoming part of the Slay universe with each chapter going on. But if I were able to reset this, I would call it Not Justified with Magic. That's what I would call this series. There you go, Scott. After you.
I love the title. It's great. With all the properties that I launch, all the things that I do a lot of searching. So I'll go to Amazon, and if I come up, I'm like, this is a great title. What if it was like The Assistant of the Magician? Great. I love it. It's going to be huge. I go look at, and there's four different series with that title. We don't use that title. So there's only surprisingly two or three things on Amazon with the actual Slay title. And one of them revolves around it's fiction about the fashion industry. Another one is kind of a LGBTQ centric kind of story. But also sort of about style and culture and things like that. There are hundreds of blank Slayer blank, but very few actual Slay. And being able to get, and this goes into the business side of things. Let's see if we can go back to main real quick, so get a little slight bigger look at this. What's really important right now in the business is when you have a book cover, the main title, the author names need to be legible when it is tiny, 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 like very down. Let's see if I can get this. Bear with me, A and Rob. Hold on a second.
Think about like when you're searching for something on Amazon and it says, you may also like this. Think about how tiny those images are on your computer or on your phone.
Rob can't see this, but I've adjusted it down to about the size you might see it on an Amazon page. And you can read Slay clear as a bell. You can see that the S is a dollar sign. So I think I'm really proud of this title. I'm really proud of this whole franchise that Rob and I are launching. It's very clear to me what this is about. It's Slay. There's a dollar sign on it. You know, right off the bat, if you're any kind of a geek, any kind of a genre fan, you know, oh, this is about people who kill monsters for money. It just jumps off the page. And then Rob's name and my name are big enough that they are visible because I have enough of readership now that if people see my name, they'll just buy it in the drop of a hat. So yes, they might see it in the metadata and the listing, but the bottom line is if they see it on the cover, they're going to at least click on it and see what the story is about. And then I think I will have them buy the short and curlies and take money out of their wallet. That is the
goal. Also, I love that it. Neither one of our names is like Antonius Andropoulos Giannopoulopoulos.
Listen, so
that,
yeah.
The fact that we have 8 and 9 letters in our name, that also helps.
That helps. That helps. Trust me, if Rob was either Greek or Hispanic, I would be like, yeah, change your name, bro. You need a pen name. Sorry. Not to
Roberto be de la Villalobos de Ecuador. Gracias.
We're going to have to truncate that, bro. Truncate that shit. All right, just AK.
Just call me Bob.
We're ready for the next one, eh?
Marianne Miller asked, was Billy supposed to die off early?
Fuck you, Marianne Miller. Fuck off.
Way to go, Marianne Miller. Way to go, Marianne Miller.
Do I remember you saying that? Was it a different character? And if so, why did that change?
Okay, I'll take this one. Yeah, motherfucker was supposed to, he was just there. The whole purpose of Billy, mm-hmm. This is why I brought Rob in, you guys. The whole purpose of Billy was so that I could have a point of view scene to convey what a dangerous, efficient guy Lincoln was when you're not in Lincoln's head. I feel sometimes very important. If I want the reader to understand, to get a vibe and a feel for how lethal these people are, if you're in that person's head, they sort of come across like Superman. Like I targeted him and I shot him and I did this and then this guy died. It just doesn't, have the same feel. You substitute in a 19, 20, 20, 21 year old who's tried to get into crime just to pay for college and just wants to do this one gig and get the fuck out. And then people are getting slaughtered all over him. And then from his view, you get to see how Lincoln moves, how Lincoln operates, how he works in the shadows, how the Great Cloak works, all that shit. So that's all Billy was. Billy was just a conduit to get your initial, the first impression is the most important impression, to get your first impression of Lincoln. So, you know, this is a fucking player. And then you get into all of Lincoln's weaknesses later on. But first look, that is not someone you want to be screwing with. And then shit blew up on me. And then all of a sudden fucking Billy's a fucking major character. And I had to call Rob and have him bail my ass out on the story.
And I will point out before we came up with the end and what is leading in, you know, that last word in the epilogue and what is leading in number two, all that essentially came from about, you know, every hour or two, I'd say, well, all right, is this where we're going to kill off Billy? And Scott would be like, no, I still need Billy for this. I'm like, okay, oh, now this chapter, this is where we're going to kill off Billy. Well, no, Billy needs to survive this because I need him for this. And then by the end, it just became, well, turns out this book is as much about Billy as it is about Lincoln yep. Franks. And then all of a sudden, we had two main characters. And I will tell you, that leads into the grandma moment, which still gives me goosebumps. The way that epilogue, that one word ending to the epilogue, just, I don't even remember. This is the best part about working with Scott. A lot of these ideas, we cannot remember whose idea it was, mm-hmm. right? It came so organically through our conversations. But one of us at some point just said, you know what the last word should be? Should be Billy saying, grandma? And we were like, oh! And it's just like freaking awesome. And that led us to everything that you saw. It was a very linear path after that. And man, I loved it. Loved it, loved it, loved it.
It was a huge, huge compliment to the skills I've developed over the past few years. Rob and I went over this in Sheboygan for a week. We knew what the last mm-hmm. line of it was. And then mm-hmm. I texted Rob as I'm writing him like, should we modify it this way? Modify it this way. He's like, you know what? Just go ahead and do it the way you thought about it ahead of time. And then I sent it to Rob. So Rob already knew what the last line was going to be. And he still got fucking chills reading it.
I got like emotional. Like as it was coming up, I was all gearing up. And then he says it. And I was just like, oh, we only just said grandma. And it just changed the whole world. Ah, freaking awesome. Woo.
So we think we got lightning in a bottle with Billy. That the end result is, you know, once you start writing stuff, even though I usually write detailed outlines, I didn't, but I sort of knew where the story was going. Turns out I didn't. Once you start writing things and characters like Billy or Pookie Chang, they just take over and you are sort of, as an author, you're sort of along for the ride. And then you have to be like, this is this character is awesome. I love this character. I know everybody else is going to love this character. How do I get a great story out of this character? And you motherfuckers don't even know. Fucking Billy's arc. Billy's arc is quite frankly the coolest shit I've ever done and I and Rob will ever do. Frankly, we've already set the bar, Rob. We're never going to top it. Sorry,
now,
it's over.
I will point out, Marianne, that I still got four more books to try and kill that little beast son of a bitch. So let's just see how this goes. That arc might get smaller every damn book. I'm just saying.
All right, AK, hit us.
Okay, that made me really. Also, I will tell you guys, I'm going to promise you right now, remind me next summer when they do their writing retreat, I'm going to capture some video. I can't play audio for you, but it's amazing to watch them work because everything they just said is totally true. They will back and forth like, oh, that idea you came up with about Billy. And he'll be like, no, it's your idea. Whatever. And then they'll just move on. And then, you know, Scott can say something like, should we kill Billy? And Rob will be like, nah. And that's the end of the conversation. That's it. Because they have such a good working relationship and such a long history as friends. That's enough. There's no need for explanation. So I promise you guys, I'm going to try and get some video of that to show you after next summer's video retreat.
Just you know what we need is like four cameras, time lapse to show the entire day because it's funny. You'll see Scott camped in exactly the same spot for 12 hours, and then you will see me. I am in like every room. I'm like, okay, I got to get out while we're talking about this. I got to walk down to that room. I got to walk to the kitchen. I got to walk around this island. I've got to be around when I'm thinking I'm walking, when Scott's thinking he's sitting. It's
and really I will also say that there is... that is the only time, the only writing week where Scott sits in the same place and focuses for 10 hours a day. And I think that is also the joy of your lifelong relationship and friendship and your respect for each other's writing minds and brains and stuff like that. So I will ask another question. We can stay a little bit late or I can add these to next week. If you guys have the time,
Rob, you got time to go a half hour longer, man?
I'm fine staying a little longer, absolutely.
Okay.
Terrific. So my next
question for you, A. When you ask this question, could you bring up a scotch after asking this question? That's a question I'm asking.
Of course.
We can stay late as long as there's more alcohol involved. That's how that works out. All right. I'll see if I can get my housemate to bring me another drink. Oh, shit.
Okay. Sean Dyer asked another great question, which is, a little more specifically, Scott, but just like I mentioned, Rob has known Scott forever. So if you have any opinions too, you should share. He said, what lessons learned over the course of Scott's career went into the sauce when you wrote Slay? And was the approach any significantly different from the first podcast version of Nocturnal? So I know, Scott, you have to answer the Nocturnal part of it. But what I wanted to sort of add and see if Rob could answer is, over the last three writing retreats, the last 3 years, have you seen an evolution?
You're asking Rob that.
Yeah.
Okay.
Scott's approach. I mean, Scott's ability to kind of, whatever, focus it, learn to co-write, that kind of thing.
It's interesting, even during the last question, when you were saying, this is rare for Scott to stay this focused for this long, and then Scott, you're, you know, ADHD story about the, you know, 98 minutes spent on the colors of an imaginary football team. It's odd, and I don't know what it is, Scott, but we are kind of constantly speaking, and we're breaking the tension, and we're letting each other's minds race in different directions. And so anytime we're sitting there for these long chunks of time, it never really feels like as long as an amount of time as it could be. So I guess I'm at a disadvantage because I've never seen your standard writing procedure. I've only seen it the three summers we worked together. And what's that first week of that first summer of writing our first screenplay? Mm-hmm. That we were about halfway through this week and we're just like, you know what? This is fucking working. Like this is working really, really well. And A even pointed out, she's just like, yeah, you guys, even when you disagree, you do it in a very constructive way. And so that's the only thing I've ever seen of your writing process, Scott. So I think you need Rob, to talk about what your standard process is like and if it is different at all when you and I are collaborating.
Well, I can say when Rob's not around, basically the writing process is a shit show. I can all of a sudden, like, I'll get into it, and like today, going preparing the Slay final draft to pass on to Big John. That was, I think, 5 hours went by, and I sort of knew there was other stuff I was scheduled to do, but ignored all of it until A had to come up and be like, I think you have an ad read you have to do, and it's due in an hour. It's like, oh, yeah, yeah, that's fucking right. That's fucking right. And it's on my calendar. There are alerts popping up. All of that shit just sort of goes away. But a lot of the time, I'm distracted by stuff online. I'm distracted by email. I'm distracted by all the projects I want to do I can't get to. And it's very difficult to get any writing done at all. So sometimes the daily 2,000-word allotment can take sometimes it can take an hour. I just blast through everything. I'm good. Great. And I'll keep growing. Other times the 2000 word allotment can take 12 hours. But what's different, because I don't have any co-creators, right? I bounce stuff off of A every now and then, but I sort of know where all these individual stories are going. When I'm working on something with Rob, it's very, very different. Because like I said, we have been telling stories to each other for 35 years. So if I have a lot of times, I'll say it like this. I can get this awesome idea, figure out the story's going, literally text A like, we're going to be millionaires. And fucking, and then 8 hours later, be like, ah, fuck, this shit doesn't work. And I've lost the whole day. So when writing with Rob, finding out shit doesn't work happens in about 30 seconds to a minute. And it's just, we've known each other so long, there's zero ego involved in all of this. It's not Rob's answer. It's not my answer. It's the right answer. That's what we get. And I've never worked with anybody who can do that except Rob. Everybody else seemed like I walk around on eggshells with other creators. I'm like, well, that's really cool. But have you thought about this? And people can get their asses can get chapped in a fucking hurry. But Rob doesn't give a shit. All Rob cares about is it's math, kind of. It's like, yeah, that equation, that's better than the other equation. We just keep going. And then
plus, I use a really good ass moisturizer. So the trap thing is not a problem at all.
Hold on, I got a little.
Here, follow that one up, A.
Yep, A, we're.
I do want to specifically go back for you, Scott, and I want you to answer Sean's second question, which was your approach significantly different from the first podcast version of Nocturnal, which you also wrote to produce?
I would say there's definitely some similarities in there, but I had a better vision of where I wanted Nocturnal to go, I think. And Nocturnal went off the rails. No, you know what? I think Sean's a big time fan, categorical knowledge of my work. And I think he's very perceptive. I think they're very, very similar, but it's not me saying that. I got emails and tweets and things from fans are like, this is awesome. This feels like Nocturnal back in the day. So apparently a large portion of the fan base just loves to fly without a net. They're like, how's he going to work his way out of this one? So I think they wound up being very similar. But these are the only two things I've ever done that I've approached like this. Writing as I go, it's Nocturnal and Slay. So I think they wound up being very similar.
I want to talk about Scott. And I want to give you some props for this. So Scott figured out by reading the first, 17 chapters before I started helping him work on this book. And he knew, like, I have my reading pace and doing these characters and the way I've written this, I have this many words that I know is a 10 to 15 minute chapter. And so when we were putting together, how book two is going to be and all the way through book three, we've gotten this around. He would say, okay, I need to use half of this chapter. This is X number of words. Can we get everything said in that number of words? So he is even self-editing to the point where he's just like, I've got to make sure I am so streamlined in what I'm writing here, it can fit into 1,350 words. And if I can do that, then I know the chapters won't be too long. Now, you will notice the last few chapters in the epilogue were much longer when in the Slay, when Scott was reading it live than the earlier were, because it was just like, we want to get this done. Let's just make some mega-sized chapters and get it all done. But the way Scott did it and the way we've already broken down literally the number of words we're going to use in each chapter about each thing is already broken down for Scott when he writes it. That helps you keep on track. And it's just the fact that you were able to recognize that and figure it out. And Scott Sigler, do the math that made it work. You deserve
You deserve applause for that, my friend. Well played.
Thank you very much. Thank you very much. Great one in the chat room. I'll pop to you for one sec. Sorry, D79 says, would you rather fight one Jim Butcher-sized chicken or 100 chicken-sized Jim Butchers? I was on a panel of Jim Butcher 2 days ago. It was awesome to see the guy. He's we've met a couple times in the con circuit, and he doesn't remember me that well, but Jim Butcher was one of the influences on the story, the Harry Dresden files, and Jim Butcher has a mathematical system to writing. Pertaining to what Rob was just saying, we're going to have an action adventure, an action sequence of this much, then a recovery of this much, then an action of this much. And there's a blog post out there. If you guys are aspiring writers, I highly recommend you look it up, like Jim Butcher's system or formula or something like that. So I would rather fight one Jim Butcher-sized chicken. I would rather fight one Jim Butcher-sized chicken because you only got to kill him once and then you get to eat for a long goddamn time.
As a podcast network, our first priority has always been audio and the stories we're able to share with you. But we also sell merch, and organizing that was made both possible and easy with Shopify. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell and grow at every stage of your business, from the launch your online shop stage all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. They have an all-in-one e-commerce platform and in-person POS system, so wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. With the internet's best converting checkout, 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms, Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers. Shopify has allowed us to share something tangible with the podcast community we've built here, selling our beanies, sweatshirts, and mugs to fans of our shows without taking up too much time from all the other work we do to bring you even more great content. And it's not just us. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. Shopify is also the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/realm, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/REALM now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/realm.
Hey, next question.
Did y'all see the size of that chicken?
There's your
film reference.
This is how Slay gets written. Like, we'll be talking, somebody drop a movie line. That's going in. That's going
like
in.
We're putting that chicken reference in. There's no doubt about that.
This is actually my favorite off-the-cuff question from somebody new. Ryan Lloyd wrote in and asked, how much of this ending of this fucking insane story did you know when you started writing? This story feels like improv, but I can't imagine the ending just fell into place. You fuckers are crazy.
Well, let me jump in here. Billy was supposed to appear in one chapter and then die. So the fact that he's in 33 of the 37 chapters tells you a little bit about how the storyline might have changed just a little bit as we went along.
Well, this is the fun of this for me is, as I mentioned, I write incredibly detailed outlines for the bigger novels. And because everything to me, if you guys are going to spend your time and money on something that I made, and even if you get it for free, you're still spending your time and you can't get your time back. Even if you're going to do that, it has to be right. And it has to have that moment when you get to the end of the story where I always call it a satanic Seinfeld episode where everything comes together at the end. All the stuff you've seen, there's a reason for it. And if I do it right, then you actually want to fucking go back and reread it. You know, it's like The Sixth Sense. You want to go back and like, oh, fuck, he was telegraphing this the whole way and I just missed it. That's the fun game of reading a solo Scott Sigler novel. This is much more like, oh, shit, that fucking character turned out a lot cooler than I thought. Can we work this bitch in later on? It's much more, improv is the right word for it. It's I guess mm-hmm. you would call it structured, self-organizing improv, if you want to get a crazy term for it right there. Oops. Okay. Did I answer the question?
You did. We're going to do a couple. We only have a few more left. I lied when I said 75.
Oh, well, shit. All right.
Yeah, but we have 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 questions left from my list.
Well, they better all be freaking 15 parters. See, that's called math, Scott, by the way.
I got to pause for 1 second. You know, we're talking about movie references getting dropped in all the time. And I got to give a shout out to Jen Hawthorne in the comments. She goes, Billy's tough. He's a harbor chick. All right, go ahead, A.
Okay. I have one question, rapid fire for you, Scott, just you, Scott. AJ Mack asks, is Lincoln related to the hippo?
No. Next question.
Great. Now, this is, I think, for both of you. Jason Bennett asked, do you know exactly what Lumencia looks like? Will we get to see more of that? And how about the Bastion?
Rob, take it.
I love this because this is conversations that Scott and I had. We'd be in the middle of writing something, and you're like, you know what we need? A wharf. Well, you know what's really cool? Nobody knows what the fuck Lumencia works with. And guess what? Look, there's a wharf now. So it has grown. It has changed. Once we set something down in it, it's there. It's not moving. It's not changing. It can be referenced again. But that's the nice thing about creating this world as we go. We didn't go all J.R.R. Tolkien and draw the whole map before we started writing.
Yep.
That map changed just in book one about 48 times. So, Scott and I know exactly what Lumencia looks like. 100%. Whatever the hell we need it to look 100%. Like. That's 100%. What it looks like.
It's categorical knowledge. It's engraved in my brain. And but you know what? The times are tough. The budget's not so big. You know, we don't got the money. So with the fan maps of Lumencia, we'll review them and look at them. It'll be fine. But you're not getting wild. Well, I'll tell you what, though. Preparing the final draft to send a big John and Rob today, I must have added 30-plus pages to Siglerpedia. So Siglerpedia.scottsigler.com. We're having a little bit of trouble with it right now on certain browsers. It's not working. We don't know why. But the Lumencia leopards and the fat. Oh, shit. I wonder if I should share this. Okay. So I'll share this. So there was a grocery store chain called Carney's in the story. But I've already got a Carney character because apparently, according to asshole Big John Viscara, who has a Siglerpedia page on Billy, apparently is a popular name in the Siglerverse. And I found this fucking page today that I don't know how long he's fucking had it. There's 8 Billys that I fucking written this guy. Like, fuck you. And so now, so I couldn't have another Carney because we have a Carney in the detective. So now the grocery store chain is no longer Carney's grocery store chain. It's Frau Munda's groceries. And,
do they sell cheese there?
They, thank you, Rob. They do.
A is dying. You probably hear her, even though she's muted from downstairs.
Y'all, I love you, but fuck you both.
In fact, they sell a lot of German cheese, Rob. It's the craziest thing. I don't know what happens.
Really, really amazing.
So
that tends to be a softer, more pungent cheese, I believe.
Baby, that's not me. You get mad at Rob. You like Rob. You can't
fuck
get mad
both.
At me.
I love you beyond measure, the both of you, and fuck you both.
Now, he also did ask about the Bastion. Oh, yeah. And I'm telling you, Scott had this overall arching idea. We have put so many layers and details and like one of those happy accidents about how Rixitor is our team. You are going to learn so much about the Bastion over the next few books. And it's pretty fucking awesome, if I do say so myself.
I mean, honestly, not to toot our own horn, but I would be fucking every week. Whatever day Netflix releases an episode of this shit, I would be fucking in front of that TV with a big bucket of popcorn because this, for something that started out completely organic, writing off the top of my ass, the thread work, if you will, that goes into this to bring it to a conclusion in season 5 is it's everything Rob and I have ever wanted to watch as fans. We want continuity. We want character development. We want to see things all come to a logical yet surprising conclusion. And fucking Slay has it all, man. This is just, it's just fucking so good. We're so excited.
And Scott, correct me if I'm wrong, but when you started writing this, you didn't envision this long overreaching. You thought this would be kind of a one shot, one novel, maybe if it turns into something great, but it wasn't. The idea of how every reference is going to be re-referenced wasn't necessarily what you had planned, right?
I figured there would be multiple seasons because, again, the whole point of this was, let's come up with some entertaining shit that's factoring in the things I enjoy watching right now that will keep the podcast going until we get to GFL Book 7, until we get to some of the things that are going to take a year and a half to podcast in the primary feed. So I kept it open-ended. I assume there'd be a Slay season 1, 2, 3, because that's the business side of the podcasting part. Fiction podcasting's in resurgence right now, and the big fiction podcasts, they do multiple seasons, season 1, season 2, season 3, et cetera. So I set Slay up to have multiple seasons, but I did not, most of the, this isn't a dig on anybody else's storytelling because it's different than mine, but most of the podcast, the horror podcast that I've listened to are much more vignettes and open-ended, and they are not a very detailed through line through multiple seasons. It's a collection of short stories that happen to be sort of in the same area. And Rob listened to a bunch of these too, to where we were going to, some of them do have a single season, very detailed through line. But if you're thinking about 3-4 seasons, it's a bit of a slapdash. It's a Twilight Zone, basically the Twilight Zone, awesome episodes that are sort of connected, but not really. And not, so that is what I originally set Slay up to be. And then the storytelling style took over and Rob's influence took over. And now we've got this shit nailed down for 5 seasons. It's tight.
We are pretty happy.
It's tight. With it. Let it's us fucking tell tight. So hopefully no other characters that we haven't written yet come up and surprise us and demand more red carpet time. But who fucking knows? Who fucking knows? Next question, eh?
All right, we have three remaining questions. One, I am going to answer myself because that's the easiest thing to do. Brian Kane, my dear friend, he asked, with the audio for the Slay audiobook coming from Sigler in Place sessions, would this be the first audiobook recorded in front of a live studio audience? I'm going to say for us, 100% that's the case. Yeah. That is true. This is the first time we've done that. I did a little looking when I got this question, and he specifically says audiobooks. And I can't find an audiobook of any length that was created in front of a live studio audience. I will say lots of live full cast audio dramas are recorded in front of an audience, and lots of short stories, which are mostly nonfiction and personal anecdotes on Audible, are recorded in front of an audience. But for us, this would be the first one. I'll also say that decision ultimately belongs to Scott and our dear friend and audio engineer, Steve Rickiber, who's in the chat room on Facebook. I think it's going to be a hybrid for us because I do think that there's going to be planes going overhead here and there or things that we need to fix. So this will be about a 75% in front of a live audience is my guess, maybe 85%.
I think it's more like 85, yeah.
Yeah, that's the answer to that one. I have two more questions. They are...
Hold on. I would like to point out, Scott, we did forget to do... on this very special episode of Slay. We forgot to do that.
Any of you 80s kids know what that's all about. This very very special episode of Family Ties. Yeah. Fuck yeah. We're going to, you know what, Rob, actually, I think we got a little bit of wiggle room. We got to find a way to have them actually talk about, is this a very special episode?
That's not bad. Very okay. Self-referential meta.
Yes. Sorry, A, go ahead.
So these next two questions, I think, are answerable by both of you. I'll ask the first one is from Leslie Basinger, and she asked, is any character in Slay for either one of you autobiographical in full or in part?
I'll start with that, Rob. I think I'm a small guy. I'm probably... close to the heaviest I've ever weighed right now, about 160. I did perk up to 180 at one point, but it wasn't a good 180. I'm not going to lie to you guys. There is a some people call it the Napoleonic complex, but that is more of a control complex and fighting against your diminutive stature by basically being a fucking asshole and trying to control other people. And that is not the case for a lot of us wee lads. It is more, you know, wouldn't it be fucking great if there was something we could do to compete at a higher level, so to speak. So I think I really identify with a lot of characters in this shit. I identify with Magda. I identify with Lincoln because there are areas of my life where I have a significant amount of power and it's relatively uncontrolled. So that's where I identify with Lincoln. And then there are areas of my life where it's more like Billy. Like, Billy's a fucking good dude. Like, at the end of the day, Billy is a good dude who's put in a situation where he can't compete. So this goes back to my football days. So I identify with Billy. I had all the brains, all the knowledge. I didn't have fucking coordination, speed, or size. So I was never going to play football. Now here comes Billy. So this is a little bit of fantasy fulfillment, right? This is the hero's journey. I forget the name of the book. The story has been told 1,000 times. Billy is the runt of the litter. Billy is the guy who he's Luke Skywalker. He's the farmer. And all of a sudden this is a spoiler. Billy is coming into some significant serious power, a little bit of which you saw at the end of book one. And the power that really manifested for Billy was when you actually get into a serious fucking fight, if you are the person who hits the hardest, hits first, and doesn't shy away from that, you can win fights against people you should not even be in the same room with. So that's a little bit of Billy, identifying with Billy from that regard. So I think I identify most with Lincoln and Billy, and being a dog lover, I love Dragon. Rob, how about you?
I think it's more, as Leslie talked about, parts of the characters. It's the fact that even when the shit is crashing down around them, they can still be self-referential. They can still do movie quotes. They can still reference back to something that happened a long time ago and yet still somehow manage to keep their shit together. And that's Billy, that's Link, that's Trick. I might identify as much with Shitbird. Hey, I'll do this as long as you feed me, kind of thing. So, I can relate a bit to that as well. But
that's a lifetime with Rob's. Like, if we're going to go do this, are we going to go eat after? Yes. Okay, then I'll go.
then I'm in. But I think it's more that a lot of our personalities and our interactions are based around the pop culture that we have consumed. And that's what so many of these characters, which is probably why so many of them seem quite relatable, not only to us, but to a lot of you as well.
Lovely. Baby girl, we got any more?
We do. We have one more question. I think this is answerable by both of you. It's my second favorite question of the evening. I mentioned the other one. Brandon Saint asked, all right, do you think it's possible to write a romantic subplot into a horror/fantasy/comedy ? And if so, will we see that in later books? I mean, of course, other than Dragon and Billy.
Okay.
That was pretty romantic. I'm just saying.
Well, and I want to say, I do think that was a genuine question. I would modify this a little to say you guys created this slapstick, also movie referential, also horrific, also really touching story in a lot of ways. And it's an interesting question if there's a little bit. I actually think it already exists in some ways with Magda and Link, but some kind of bigger, stronger love bond. I think it's a lovely question.
I'm gonna touch this on a couple different levels. Number one, I am going to tell everyone listening right now, don't fucking second guess me. I know what the fuck I'm talking about. I'm writing this shit. Magda and Lincoln are not ever going to be a romantic couple.
Yep.
Because you have a woman and a man in a story does not mean they are eventually going to develop sexual feelings toward each other. That is not how fucking true ride or die friendship works. Now you can have ride or die friendships that wind up being sexually oriented, of course. But these two are, when Rob and I start to get into the backstory of what happened to Lincoln and Magda, they have gone through some fucking shit together. If they were going to bone, they would have done it a long time ago. That's not going to happen. But what we do, there's romance coming that you guys haven't seen yet. And there's a bit that Rob and I haven't quite figured out yet. But the key romance in this right now is fucking Billy and Dragon. It is, you know, if you are a pet owner and you absolutely fucking adore that animal that can't wait to see you every time you step through the door, Dragon is never going to ask Billy if Billy got his homework done. Dragon is never going to say, Billy, did you bring any money this week? Because we're hard up for it. All Dragon thinks is, fuck, Billy's in the room. Oh, shit. And run around and go fucking crazy. So Dragon and Billy is absolutely a love affair. And you guys see more of that.
I will say, Rob, I want your answer too, but that's exactly what I was talking about. Like, I know that the question from Brandon was specifically romance, but this true love... that exists beyond reason happens a lot. And it's sometimes romance, it's sometimes not romance. And I would love to hear some of that from you too, Rob.
Yeah, I will say, without giving out any spoilers or anything, I mean, we are going to be showing some very, you know, intense moments in all of these characters' lives. And that's part of what happens with people. People romantically move in and out of your life, and sometimes things slow burn over time or whatever it's going to be. So, yeah, I think you absolutely can do that. You can't force it. And Scott and I had specific conversations about the man and woman working together. We don't want to go into the cliche. As many cliches as we will use, we're not going to go into the cliche of them becoming romantically involved. So just like Scott said, the Magda Link thing is two equals who feed off of each other and absolutely love each other in a 100% non-sexual way, and that is going to remain the same. But we will have more of that. We have 5 books that we're going to work with, so you will see more of these characters coming into their own, new characters coming in, old characters coming back, that kind of stuff.
Yep.
That, can absolutely lead into romance.
Well, can't tell you guys how excited I am for what is coming your way. But if you are a pet owner, you're going to see a whole lot of yourself in this story. And trust me, Billy's 20 and he's never been the big dick on campus before. He's going to become the big dick on campus at some point, and mm-hmm. shit's going to happen for Billy, and it's
going to
be...
He's going to start realizing how massive he is over these next few books, and other people are going to start noticing that as well.
Honey, I didn't say it. Baby girl, I didn't say none of that. That was Rob.
I will point out one part that I really love as we got into the later chapters. I knew what Dragon was, but to see the people during the live reads reaction when Dragon revealed her true self.
Yeah.
And then like the hashtag free Dragon movement that was happening. I just can't tell you how organic that was and how much I enjoyed that you were enjoying what was going on with this little puppy that just happens to be a giant Chinese dragon. Well done.
Yep.
Loved that. I loved that you all loved that so much.
Yeah, that was the way the end of this, the two big things that have resonated with Rob and I are the amount of people are just like, you all knew. Of course, we tell his fucking name is Dragon.
His name was Dragon. All right.
You guys know some shit's going to fucking go down with this tiny little long haired dachshund. And all of you being so excited waiting for Dragon to have her moment was straight fucking career magic. Like, I've done a lot of cool shit in my career, and I'm very happy where I am. It's the best job in the world, and I'm delighted to have it. But that shit is fucking just like serving me a giant banana split, and I'm just fucking eating it. Like, this is so good. I'm just getting it. It was fantastic. And then when Dragon delivered, you guys got what you wanted out of that. It was super fun.
And the fact that you were so patient, Scott, that you waited kind of as late as you could for that reveal. Well done,
yep.
Sir.
Yep. It's going to be great. Last
so question. I would say the last thing I'll say here is Steve Rickyberg, the iceberg just mentioned in the Facebook chat room. She was under our noses the whole time. And I think that's true. Mm-hmm. After that, I'll say congratulations to both of you. This was an epic ride. I just like I did in 2007, I got to experience it as a normal junkie, so to speak. Like I had a few questions, but because Rob and Scott were working with each other, you guys were working with each other, I got to experience the story organically, just like everybody else. And so I want to say a thousand kudos. It's so much fun. It's special. There's really hardcore, true moments that, you don't expect in a story that has sex gnomes. And you did it, and it's beautiful, and I cannot wait to see what you guys do next. I am so proud of both of you, and congratulations to you all.
Thanks, babe.
Thank you, Kay. That was awesome.
And I will say last, we're done for the day. It is 7:27. I think I'm going to end my Zoom and run upstairs, and then Rob, if you want to either stay on or while I'm running upstairs, then we're just sign off. That's all we have left.
Are we going to have another Q&A next week, or do you go through all
the questions? We are definitely going to have another Q&A next week. We will answer. If you guys have more Slay questions, you should go ahead and send them in for sure. We do have a bunch of Siglerverse questions. If you have any questions about Scott Sigler, the Siglers, the Siglerverse, Rob, email those in. I'm not sure.
Info at empty set.com
is the best way for you to reach us. And I think most of the questions next week are probably not Rob-centric.
Yeah.
So I think we'll see.
Hey, if that changes to next week and you think there's value in me coming back on, I will do that again. But if there are more general Siglerverse questions, then I will bow out and play with my dragon.
We're going to head down upstairs.
All right, Rob.
Is she coming up to do the kiss-off? Is that what's
yeah,
going
she's
on,
coming
Scott?
To do the kiss-off, which means I will now give you a kiss-off, my brother, right. And we will see you. We'll be working on this soon. I don't know when.
Sounds great. Love you all.
Later.
All of you junkies, thank you for being so supportive through this whole process. You're the best. There's my kiss-off. Bye, everybody.
Good day, sir. Okay, let's go back to Maine.
All we're going to do.
Hold on. Let me just get rid of this. Boom. Hello, darling. How are you?
I'm good. How are you?
This was honestly one of the fucking most fun episodes ever.
I agree.
It is such a fun fucking story. It's so fun. And thank you guys all for tuning in for this. We had a whole giant crowd for this. It was really great. Really enjoy it. And the last thing I'll say, and I'll be done with it, is if you give Rob and I your ears and your brain for all five books, you're going to fucking remember this story and you're going to enjoy it quite a lot. So thank you for tuning in. Appreciate you.
So until then, next week, you send in any questions you have related to anything Sigler. I'll remind you, Scott doesn't necessarily answer every question, but you're allowed to ask anything you want, and he'll deflect if he can't tell you. So that's next week. Before next week, remember that there's a junkie happy hour on Saturday night, and I'll be there for a little while, and Steve will be there for a very long while because he's awesome. And other than that, it is time for us to sign off. Thank you for staying with us this whole time. We will be back.
We will be back. Let's get this straight right here. We'll be back Wednesday, September 13th for a Slay Q&A part two, although apparently that will be more of a Siglerverse Q&A. And Rob may or may not be back. Depends on what A decides.
Yeah.
Until then, we want you to stay smart.
We still need you to stay science, you guys.
And for the love of science, people getting sick all over the place. We were people getting sick with COVID at DragonCon. There's a current wave. It doesn't look like that particularly life-threatening to most people. Mm-hmm. But there is a new wave of COVID going around. It's much more virulent, but not quite as intense. Is that correct?
We personally know 8 people actively currently right now in our own lives with COVID. So it's be careful out there. You don't want to get this sickness.
Hey, let's be careful out there.
Preposterous Hippopotamus, thank you for sharing your website. It's beautiful. You're absolutely a gorgeous, gorgeous talent with your jewelry making. Fabulous. I'm so glad that you sent it. Yeah.
Preposterous and preposterous. Throw me a fucking email on the sly. Not to her, to me.
I
gotta fucking find gifts to check.
I asked for it last
week. Listen, don't talk. Don't contradict me. Okay. Yeah.
For the love of science.
Oh, for the love of science, stay informed. You may now all kiss off into the sky.
Love
we
you,
are
Robbie.
About done. And ready, baby?
Mm-hmm.
Ha,
You have been listening to Slay, created and read by Scott Sigler. Copyright 2023, Empty Set Entertainment. For more information on the author and more books, visit scottsigler.com. Theme music is the song They're Watching Me by the band Superweapon.
Hello, dear stranger. I'd like to introduce you to something new, or perhaps something very, very old. The Heresies of Radolf Burntwine is a horror fantasy medical mystery following the titular monk turned traveling medical investigator. Follow Radolf as he navigates a nightmare world in which viruses are gods and the human race are not their favored children. Steeped in history and an aesthetic that can only be described as a combination of occult academia and laboratory Judaica, the Heresies of Radolf Burntwine have been described as Umberto Eco meets H.P. Lovecraft. For more information, check out the Patreon at thorb.info. But take care, dear stranger, for some truths are best left unknown.